Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Attempt.
Oh, really?
What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
Oh, welcome everybody to Hour 2. We'll talk a little bit more about that Baltimore police video and the repercussions from that. Also coming up in Hour 2, Governor Scott Walker got a donation from National Cannabis Industry Association. Yes, that Scott Walker, the same guy that wants to drug test people for welfare. We'll look into that. But first, I got to dig into this $500 million worth of tax revenue that's been made in the state of Colorado and what Project Sam had to say about that.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
All right, today in the Drug War Data Mines, we herald the announcement that Colorado in May of 2017 reached the $500 million mark in how much marijuana tax revenue was brought in. That's great news, and our friends Mason Tvert, Brian Vincente with VS Strategies were out there with an oversized check, big $500,000 novelty check, you know, like you see on the sweepstakes and so forth in the lottery. $500 million check that they showed made out to the people of Colorado, and it's a great public relations day for marijuana financial data. But of course, when you report on these stories, journalists out there will often reach out to the opposition to try to get, you know, some fair and balanced reporting, right? And so they reached out to Project Sam, or maybe Project Sam sent them a press release one way or the other. They stated, and this is according to the report in The Cannabist, that the costs of drug use are greater than any financial revenue benefits Colorado may reap. Quote, like the tobacco industry before it, the Colorado marijuana lobby is touting marijuana as the panacea for every contemporary challenge Colorado faces, Kevin Sabet, Sam's president, said in a statement. The truth is the health and safety costs caused by the commercialization of marijuana far outweigh any revenues collected, end quote. Now, this is something, this is the long dormant talking point, the Sabet conjecture, that I haven't heard him bring up in a couple of years. I'm really shocked this came out because he's kind of ducked on this talking point for some years now. The way the talking point went was way back before we legalized marijuana. Kevin Sabet would run around telling people that, well, for every dollar that we bring in alcohol and tobacco taxes, it costs us $10 in social costs from healthcare and productivity and all these other costs. Every $1 in alcohol and tobacco taxes brings in $10 worth of costs. Therefore, we don't want to legalize marijuana. The implication being that every $1 in marijuana tax would cost us $10 in social costs. And I've lampooned this for a while. Like every time Colorado comes out with a $100 million month, I turn to Kevin Sabet and ask, gee, where's the $1 billion in social costs, right? One to 10, one, where's our $1 billion in costs? Hell, I'll give you a break even. Where's the $100 million in costs, right? So he had that talking point a lot before we legalized marijuana. But once the $100 million started coming in, once those big numbers started rolling in, you didn't hear that talking point so much. You heard the talking point about, well, they're not raising that much. They're not solving all the budget problems. Which, again, that's stuff they're putting in our mouth. We never said that. We never said legalizing weed would solve all the budget problems. We said it would create infinitely more tax revenue than we're taking in now. Which is true. Anything more than zero is infinitely more. Do the math. So Kevin Sabet here says the health and safety costs caused by the commercialization of marijuana far outweigh any revenues collected. Here's the paragraph that blew me away. SAM officials cited a 2011 U.S. Department of Justice report, the National Drug Threat Assessment, which estimated the 2007 economic cost of illicit drug use, including heroin, meth, and marijuana, and cocaine, and all illicit drugs, at $193 billion in the United States. Okay, 2011 says 2007 had $193 billion of cost from all drugs. Got that number? $193 billion from all drugs. SAM officials equated that to $3.3 billion in lost productivity, health, and safety costs in Colorado on a per capita basis. Well, you know me, folks. I look shit up. And I thought to myself, that number seems a bit odd. $3.3 billion. Now, first of all, remember, his original Sabet conjecture was $1 would cost us $10, right? Well, half a billion costing us $3.3 billion works out to $1 costing us $6.6 billion. So not quite, right? He got two-thirds of the way there. Let's just give him that, right? He got two-thirds of the way there. He got to 6.6. It wasn't quite 10, but okay, you got to 6.6, right? But then still, think about that number, $3.3 billion in lost productivity. But wait a minute. You're taking $193 billion number from the costs of all drugs. How does that work out to $3.3 billion in losses from just marijuana in Colorado? So I cranked up the old Excel machine and started plugging in some numbers. So I took the $193 billion that they estimate was the 2007 total from all drugs, the total cost from all drugs, $193 billion. I divided that by the population of the United States in 2007, which was 301.2 million people. And the division works out to about roughly $641 per capita. Remember, because that's what they said, on a per capita basis, right? So in 2007, if you're going by that National Drug Threat Assessment that said $193 billion, in 2007 there's 301.2 million people, that drops you to $641 per person. Okay. So then I try to figure out, what was the population in Colorado? Because he's coming up with 3.3 billion. Well, working backwards, 3.3 billion divided by $641 per person works out to 5.147 million people, which was the population of Colorado in 2011, which was then when this report came out. So, follow the bouncing ball here. Kevin Sabet's saying that because in 2007, all drugs caused $193 billion in problems, that in 2017, marijuana by itself is causing $3.3 billion in problems. The numbers don't add up, Kevin. It's all fuzzy math. It's all BS. You're just, once again, trying to scare people who don't know any better. And unfortunately, I looked this stuff up and could do math. So sorry, buddy. Nobody's buying it. We'll talk more about these so-called productivity losses that he cites and healthcare costs that he cites. Even if you treated all drugs equally and said marijuana caused as much problem as heroin or cocaine or meth, the numbers don't add up. But we'll deal with that in another segment.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Please help support my independent cannabis radio journalism by becoming a patron of The Marijuana Agenda. Just log on to mjagenda.com and click the Become a Patron button. For your $4.20 monthly donation, you'll keep our free live YouTube show on the air and receive your own private podcast feed of the first hour. For just $9.99, you'll receive both hours of the show and special downloads only available for VIPs. Thank you for your support.
As a formerly incarcerated person, I know firsthand all the ways that we are disenfranchised when we are run through the system. Every day I work to help people regain their rights and dignity, but the fight is far from over. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I was told by the DART Task Force in Toledo that they're actually sprinkling fentanyl on marijuana now.
Okay, maybe you're a little high.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every Friday for the Reefer Rock Review with Herb Thrasher from 420radio.org. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And, continuing this talk about Kevin Sabet and the Project Sam people. It's just laughable to think. And he needs it. He needs it so badly to be true. He came out and said, quote, "Waving around an oversized novelty check makes pot lobbyists feel good, but it does not help the families and communities who have to deal with the costs of marijuana commercialization." And so I went and looked up their full statement. Let's see if I can find, where did I put that statement? Oh, well, we'll just pull that up again here. Learn About Sam. The website's learnaboutsam.org. If you're interested in following up Project Sam has to say, it's good for a laugh quite often whenever they respond to the latest news on marijuana and get themselves schooled by reporters and reformers and activists that know better, that actually look this stuff up and can tell you the truth about it. But they this news of $500 million in tax revenue is just the latest death by a thousand cuts that prohibition is suffered. And so in their report, in this is their statement on this report, they had the statement about the $3.3 billion in costs annually for Colorado, considered on a per capita basis, which again is the cost from all drugs, right? And when those reports from the National Threat Assessment talk about loss of productivity, talk about these supposed costs for marijuana, a lot of it's bunk. Okay, so if you look at like the costs from heroin or cocaine or meth, there are some solid objective costs you can add up. What is the cost of a shot of Narcan? What is the cost of an outpatient treatment program? What is the cost of running a clean needle center? Whatever it is, they're numbers. They're actual numbers you can add up. But when it comes to marijuana, people aren't dying of marijuana. People aren't going to the hospital for marijuana in any sort of significant numbers. They're not suffering long-term debilitation from their use of marijuana. They're not voluntarily checking into rehab that often. So you add up those numbers and there's not too much there. It's not very scary, especially on a per capita basis. Look at the cost of a marijuana consumer compared to the cost of a tobacco or alcohol consumer, for example. Canada did that in a study once. In Canada, they found that the costs for the tobacco consumer were about $800. It cost Canada about $800 a consumer per year when you added up, you know, the treatment for lung cancer, because they got national health. So there would be a higher cost. Let's recognize that. Well, maybe not, but regardless, $800 for the tobacco smoker, because they're going to get lung cancer, they're going to increase your healthcare costs, etc. $165 for the beer drinker. They're coming in hangover and they're getting cirrhosis and they're having to deal with alcoholism and such, right? $165. And for the cannabis consumers, the cost per Canadian per year to the society was $20. That was it, $20, right? So they're not saying there's no harm. Well, there is some harm. It cost us about $20 to deal with it. And that was the cost of, in this study, it was the cost of the social costs plus the cost of enforcement, right? So in tobacco, the enforcement costs were like having, you know, people check ID. But for alcohol, there's stings and there's bars and licensing and a bunch of stuff cause more costs. So they're even counting the costs of regulating marijuana in this. $20 per Canadian per year. Now, you can't tell me we can't muster up $20 worth of taxes out of a pot smoker every year. They probably pay it up front. Get the year out of the way, man. So when Sabet wants to save $3.3 billion from marijuana legalization, it's bad enough he's including all drugs in that calculation. It's worse that he's ignoring the fact that marijuana doesn't lead to a great deal of that total amount in the first place. Marijuana smokers aren't costing society that much. And it totally ignores the benefit, right? It's not just a deficit that we get from the cost of marijuana smokers who may behave in an impaired fashion on the roadways, who may, call in sick to work on 420, whatever excuse he wants to make. There's not just a deficit to consider, but what are the benefits to bringing about marijuana legalization? The costs we're not spending on thousands of marijuana arrests every year. The people who are switching off of opiates or reducing their opiate use. We get that counted on our side of the ledger too, don't we? So you would have to ignore all the benefits of legalization, from the savings in law enforcement, from the substitution for other more dangerous drugs that are contributing to that $3.3 billion he talks about, that he made up. You have to ignore all that, and you'd have to throw marijuana in with all drugs for this number to even be within the realm of possibility of being true. So that's bad enough that he says that. But now there's a few other things in this statement I want to get to. He says, quote, "In fact, Colorado is paying these costs already. For example, large businesses in Colorado now state that after legalization, they have had to hire out-of-state residents in order to find drug-free employees." Oh, wow. Bring out the world's tiniest violin and call a wambulance for the big businesses in Colorado that are finding it more difficult to dictate what their employees do with their off-hours time when a state has given them the constitutional right to do so. Wow. Boo-hoo. They can't find drug-free employees. Guess what? There are no drug-free employees. You would be hard-pressed in America to find a single person who is lacking in their use of any drug. There may be a few out there, and those folks, I'll bet, are using caffeine, are using sugar, are all sorts of things that ought to also be in that consideration of what drugs are. Don't think that sugar ain't a drug. You don't think sugar's not a drug? Bring your kids over to my place. Let me feed them full of candy and send them back home with you. You tell me it's not a drug. Another thing that he threw in here for fun was that the pot revenue is not newsworthy. $500 million, not newsworthy. Colorado Department of Education indicates their schools require about $18 billion with a B. He actually wrote that. In capital construction funds alone, marijuana taxes do not even make a dent in this gap. Well, let's see. $500 million is somewhat of a dent in 18. right? A half is a dent in 18. It's 1/36. It's 1/36 that you weren't getting before. It's 1/36 that was going to unregulated underground dealers who paid nothing in taxes. It was 1/36. It was a half a billion dollars worth of revenue that didn't get transacted on an illicit scale that leads to guns and leads to violence and leads to murder and death and torture in Mexico and elsewhere.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
All right, folks, that sound means that it's 4:20 here in the Pacific Time Zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. Oh, boy, we wouldn't want to contribute to the declining productivity, right? In a nation where productivity has done nothing but increase since 1980, even though our wages have stayed stagnant, Sabet wants you to think that marijuana is killing productivity. Sure.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all respected customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Did you know that in Georgia, 1 in 13 adults is in jail or prison or on parole or probation? As a mother and as a professional, I advocate for access to drug treatment instead of incarceration. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Come lend your voice to the fight. Register now at reformconference.org.
The Marijuana Agenda, Kevin Sabet's boogeyman since 2012.
You have offended my family, and you have offended Shaman Temple.
Yes, might have gotten away with it too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pod 2.0.
Not your father's Woodstock weed.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. Hope you had a great safety briefing. I had a little Alaskan thunderfuck. That's what we're smoking today. ATF. So there's a story out. I got it by way of a press release from One Wisconsin Now, which is one of these progressive organizations, I believe. It says, One Wisconsin Now is a statewide communications network specializing in effective earned media and online organizing to advance progressive leadership and values. So in this press release, they talk about Governor Scott Walker in Wisconsin. Now, Scott Walker is one of the more odious governors in the state, in the United States, I should say, because he's one of these guys who's been fighting to require drug testing for welfare. That people who are poor, who want some assistance from the state, well, they must be druggies. They have to prove they're not. They're guilty until proven innocent. They got to prove they're not druggies before we'll help them. Otherwise, they can just starve. They can just be homeless. He's one of these guys. And it's bad enough because we've gone through the data and shown you that it doesn't work, first of all. Second of all, people who are applying for public assistance usually test at about 1/4 the rate for drug test positives as the general job-seeking population. Half to 1/4 the rate, right? Part of the reason why, and this will shock you, drugs cost money. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Drugs cost money, and so people without money don't get to do drugs as often. Now, the righties and the conservatives on this issue will say, well, we don't want taxpayer money going to fund someone's drug habit. Those people and their drug habit, right? It's really interesting to me that whole idea, just as on a broader scale, this idea that we should specifically say what things are too immoral for our tax money to be spent upon. Somebody smoking a joint. Well, my God, we can't send her any food stamp assistance to get some groceries. She's smoking a joint. Let her kids starve. That's their attitude, right? And they do the same thing when it comes to, like, abortion rights, right? Like, what? You want to have a medical procedure over your own body? Well, we think it's icky and immoral, so no taxpayer money can go for that. Now, predator drones bombing a wedding in Mosul that kills civilians, that's fine. We can spend plenty of tax money on that. White phosphorus that's not supposed to be used and yet somehow gets used in the Middle East. Killing and maiming people, we can spend our tax money on that. Just not pregnant women that want to end their pregnancy, and definitely not people that want to smoke a joint if they're poor. Right? So this guy's already bad enough. That's one of these guys, this Scott Walker guy, right? Here's where it gets weird, though. According to this release, and they're, you know, they take a look at the public records on campaign donations. Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, the head of the Republican Governors Association, who also was, you know, sniffing around trying to run for president as well, got $25,000 from the National Cannabis Industries Association. Now, the way this press release is phrased and framed is to point out Governor Walker's hypocrisy. How awful he is. What an awful hypocrite to take money from the marijuana lobby, the industry lobby, at the same time he's championing drug testing for welfare. And that's adequate. I think the real scrutiny needs to be at what the hell is National Cannabis Industry Association doing funneling $25,000 to such an odious drug warrior? What the hell's going on there? And I'm going to fire off some, I want to get some comment on this from the folks at National Cannabis Industry Association. Why are we supporting and trying to help reelect a guy who would require drug testing for welfare? I don't understand the agenda being advanced. First of all, Wisconsin's not a state that even has a cannabis industry. There is no cannabis industry in Wisconsin. There's no medical marijuana law there. They have a lame-ass CBD oil law that has no industry around it because people can't cultivate and produce and process that stuff. It's one of them laws where, well, if you become a federal drug trafficker and bring it back from Colorado, we won't bust you here in Wisconsin. It's one of them kind of laws. So I don't know what the NCIA is thinking as far as we're going to get political leverage in a state where there is no cannabis industry. Is it a seed donation? Is it one of these, like, maybe someday there will be a cannabis industry, and so we'll give some money to the governor there? Is it more of a national thing where he's the head of the Republican Governors Association and most of the states that have legalized marijuana, all but one of them have Democratic governors? What in the hell is going on? I want to know. I can't wrap my mind around why our lobbying groups would help support someone like Governor Walker. This is ridiculous. $25,000 contribution from NCIA on February 7th, 2017. And Walker, of course, has been calling for drug tests for benefits since late 2014. He's expanded it to require Wisconsinites to receive drug testing, not just for food assistance, not just for food stamps, which they don't have stamps anymore, but not for, just for that, but also for job training. So somebody wants to get job training now. They want to drug test these people. Now, the excuse these guys give, well, if they're going to go out and become productive members of society and have jobs, why, they're going to have to take some job that drug tests, so we should just drug test them now. First of all, that's not true. Not all drugs, not all jobs drug test. It's a declining percentage of jobs that drug test. There are lots of jobs out there where a drug test would not be required. So saying that the people on welfare or seeking job training must be able to pass a drug test so they can get employment is false. Now, they might try to counter, well, if they can't pass a drug test, it narrows the number of jobs they could go after. It narrows the number of jobs they could go after, so now we have to drug test them in order to make sure they qualify for as many jobs as possible. And to that, I would counter, what you're doing then, by government act, is incentivizing people to drug test for jobs. The federal the state government there, requiring welfare assistance and job training placement only under the condition of passing a drug test, gives the checkered flag, gives the go-ahead, the green light, to all these companies out there that want to drug test and saying, oh, well, see, now the state's doing it. We can go ahead and do it. It puts the state government in the position of approving of this method, which is not surprising because he obviously does. It's just disgusting. It's wrong. And for NCIA to be sidling up to a guy like that is just, it's scary to me. And speaking, got to bring this up. Not all drugs job test. That's right, Reverend. not all drugs job test. Better make a bumper sticker of that. I have to mention this other thing because it's a little off the warpath, but not much. And that is that we've been following this whole Russia scandal thing. You know, basically Putin and Russia wanted Trump to win. And so they worked with the Trump campaign and the Trump campaign worked with them willingly to make sure that would happen. I mean, this is the facts, folks. I mean, it's going to be a matter they're still piecing it all together and making sure they're getting all their evidence lined up and making sure everything's ironclad. But come on, folks, we know what's going on. Trump has been in hock to the Russians for two decades now, ever since he bankrupted his casinos and proved himself to be a stifler, you know, stiffen people and a fraud and a con man. American banks didn't want to work with him anymore. So he went to Russia and sidled up to the oligarchs there to get his money. It was admitted to by Eric. He said it in some magazine interview. Yeah, well, you get a lot of our investments from Russia. Of course, we work with Russia all the time, right? So we know what's going on here. Regardless, even if there is a P tape or not, Trump is in hock to the Russians and sees nothing wrong with them because they're just rich, brutal bullies like him. They stiff contractors and they silence dissent. I mean, they're buddies. They get along. They look how well Putin and Trump. If you see all the pictures with like Trump and Angela Merkel and Trump and Macron and Trump and Trudeau and all these other world leaders, and Trump just looks like a petulant little boy. He's just like, mom said I had to go to see Uncle Justin first, and then I can go play on the fire truck. Right? That's what he looks like. But when he's in that room with Putin, you see all those pictures with Putin, he's just beaming. He looks like the little boy whose helicopter divorced dad comes in and spoils the shit out of him, right? That's what he looks like. He just grins from ear to ear when Putin's around, right? So we've been following this whole Russia scandal ties thing. And so the latest story to come out is a little bit of a bummer for those of us in the marijuana community because it involves Dana Rohrabacher, the conservative from Orange County, who is I would have to say probably the best Republican in the House on the marijuana issue. The Rohrabacher Amendment has his name. I mean, he's the guy who's been standing up. He's the one who admitted, I broke the news to the Washington Post, that he admits that he uses medical cannabis. He's one of our guys. But now the reports are that the Kremlin and their intelligence services, and this also involves that Natalia Veselnitskaya, the lawyer, the beautiful female lawyer that was involved in the whole Trump Jr. thing. Apparently, there's some sort of documentary. The Kremlin has produced some documentary about this. What's the Magnitsky? So you know the excuse they've been given in the Trump Jr. thing is that they were going to discuss the Magnitsky Act, which is sanctions against Russia because of human rights abuses, and then Russia wouldn't allow Americans to adopt in retaliation. So, and this Magnitsky Act is the thing, and it's named after this Magnitsky guy who was a Russian dissident who they killed in prison. And so this documentary is made as propaganda by the Kremlin to discredit this Magnitsky guy because he's kind of got this martyr status. And so it's this whole hit job on Magnitsky. And through Veselnitskaya, they got it to Dana Rohrabacher, who had intended to play it in a hearing in Congress that had to do something with foreign relations or whatever, but intended to play this Kremlin propaganda until other Republican colleagues kind of went, dude, kind of fucked up, man. Yeah, that Dana Rohrabacher bought off another one of these Putin puppets. Now, it's been alleged for a long time about Rohrabacher that he's been the biggest Russia defender in the House, and it's something that I've kind of kept on the back burner because he's so damn good on the marijuana issue. But it's one of them deals where it's like, this may rise to the level where I can't vocally support Dana Rohrabacher if this is as true as it could be, as true as it's alleged. Man, it's just blowing my mind. I grew up in the 1980s. I grew up with Ronald Reagan. Mr. Gorbachev,
tear down this wall. They're an evil empire. Well, Nancy says they're evil and just say no.
I grew up through all of that. The Russians were the evil empire. The Russians were terrible. Of course, they were the Soviets back then, but same thing, right? And now, Republicans can't seem to bend over, well, let's say forwards, fast enough for the Russians. And this is just, and forgiving collusion and collaboration with known spies for the KGB, which is not called the KGB anymore, but same idea, right? I just, what a weird time to be alive. All right, when we come back, we'll talk more about marijuana. AAA, the Automobile Association of America, fighting against legalization. Normal is fighting back. Plus, speaking of driving and weed, 270 nanograms per milliliter in Washington State. I got to speak up about that case when we return.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
As a formerly incarcerated person, I know firsthand all the ways that we are disenfranchised when we are run through the system. Every day I work to help people regain their rights and dignity, but the fight is far from over. We need you to join us in this important fight. This October, we're coming to Atlanta for the 2017 Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference. Join us in the fight to end the drug war. Register now at reformconference.org.
The marijuana agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Veterans of Compassion with the Veterans Cannabis Group. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. And 2017 looks to be the year that we're just taking a bit of a breather from marijuana legalization. It doesn't appear that any state is going to legalize this year. We had a shot with Vermont, but they kind of dropped the ball on that and punted to a study commission. Yes, we need to study what marijuana legalization would be like. You know, four other states already doing it for 3 to 5 years. That's not enough info. Four additional states passing laws in 2016, that doesn't really give us anything to go by. We need to form our own study commission and figure out how to legalize marijuana. So that's what's going on in Vermont. In Rhode Island, they did the same thing. They kicked the can down the road with, well, we need to have a study commission. We just need to have a study commission. You know, Rhode Island's 50 miles across. Lord knows what sort of complications we'll have trying to distribute and grow and sell weed. We better have a commission, right? But come 2018 marijuana election night's going to be gangbusters, folks. Michigan, I believe, will make the ballot. They're already 100,000 signatures in to 252,000 signatures. They are looking really good in Missouri. They got 42,000 signatures last I heard. Remember, Missouri only fell by 23 signatures in 2016. So I'm thinking Michigan and Missouri. Oklahoma. Yeah, Oklahoma is already on the ballot. They will be voting on medical. We're going to have, I believe, something to vote for. What's the other state I was thinking of? Oh, yeah, New Jersey. That's it, New Jersey, because they're talking about it in the chat room. The governor race is happening, and this Patrick Murphy is the Democratic frontrunner and likely to be the next governor in New Jersey. He's pro-legalization. The legislature's already pro-legalization, and so they're just waiting for him to get into office and get Chris Christie out of there so that they can finally legalize. But the question for New Jersey, will it be home grow? That I don't think we will get. I bet that when New Jersey legalizes, it'll be a no home grow dispensary only kind of thing. And then we're back to Vermont and Rhode Island, which I do believe Vermont will legalize in 2018. And then Rhode Island has a good shot. So we might have six states already to take a look at for marijuana election night in 2018. And of course, I will bring that to you live as I have every marijuana election night since 2010. Right here on the Marijuana Agenda. Now, in the chat room, though, I should make it. Arizona, I don't think will go for it until probably 2020, I would bet, for Arizona. As far as this New Jersey legalization, which I'm saying is probably not going to have home grow, don't misinterpret that to think that you shouldn't vote for it. Vote for legalization of anything you can get. Vote for any chip you can chip away at the war on drugs. In New Jersey, legal weed, just the sales of legal weed, would be phenomenal as far as, you know, how much tax revenue they'd bring in and how many arrests would go down. Would be a wonderful thing. And keep in mind that once you've legalized possession of weed, you kill a lot of the tools cops have to try to find your home grow. A lot of the tools are gone, right? Because think of how cops find home grows, right? One, they get an anonymous tip. I got an anonymous tip that someone was growing weed. Well, how do those anonymous tips come around? Well, I smelled weed coming from their house. Well, once weed's legal, that's not any reason for cops to follow up on a complaint. You smelled weed, so what? Weed's legal. Cops sometimes will follow up and find stems and seeds in your garbage. And that's the probable cause they need to come bust your grow. Well, once weed's legal, stems and seeds are legal. There's nothing wrong with having stems and seeds, right? The canine sniff. Oh, the canine sniff. That goes away once you've legalized even a gram. Because a dog's nose can't tell you whether it's a gram or a pound. Dog's nose can't tell you. So go ahead and support any legalization that comes your way, even if it doesn't have home grow. Now bitch about it. Oh, bitch and moan and complain about not having home grow, but it can't be a deal breaker. It just can't be a deal breaker. Too many people go to jail. Too many people's lives are overturned and ruined when people are busted for weed. This came up in a discussion, was it on Twitter, I think, where somebody was pointing out the issue 3 in Ohio, how it failed. And he wondered, how many people have been arrested in Ohio since issue 3 failed? Well, 2016, probably about 18,460 people, about, because the 2012 rate was 159 arrests per 100,000 people. Now, Ohio's got a really low arrest rate compared to the rest of the nation because they have this massive decrim. They've got decrim that goes up to 100 grams. And some people argued that as, that's why we don't need to support issue 3 getting Nick Lachey rich, and is because they got 100 gram decrim. Well, that's nice and all, but it still means 18,460 people got arrested, not decrim tickets, got arrested in Ohio because marijuana is still illegal there. Arrested for sales, arrested for cultivation, arrested for... Now, not all those things would have been made legal, but many of them would, and some of the ones that weren't made legal would have been harder to bust if weed were legal. All right, let me get to this story about weed and driving, because the first one has to do with AAA, and we've brought this up before, but now Normal has written about it, saying that over the first 6 months of 2017, AAA has been spreading misinformation in Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, and other states. This is a report coming from Leafly, with fears of the increased plague of drugged driving and more babies will be born high. Oh my God. So AAA is just going overboard on this, and Normal is calling him out on this. Because number one, according to federal data, auto accident fatalities have fallen significantly over the past two decades, the same time when we were legalizing marijuana for medical or social use. In 96, when California became first state to legalize, there were 37,500 fatal car crashes. The total is under 30,000. Under 30,000 now. A study from the American Journal of Public Health reports fatal traffic accident rates in legal marijuana states are no different than those in states where cannabis remains illegal. A separate study in the same journal reported that the enactment of medical marijuana laws is associated with reductions in traffic fatalities compared to other states, particularly among the younger drivers. So please, AAA, this is facts. I mean, you want AAA to be a neutral organization, right? They ought to be like Consumer Reports. They ought to report the data on what's happening on America's roads. What are the threats for drivers, right? They're an automobile club. They're a driver's club. So certainly, yes, report the facts. And if you're reporting the facts, you'd have to report that drivers discovered with THC in their system are statistically no different than sober drivers when it comes to assessing crash risk, so long as you account for age and gender, because young teenage males are the ones who are overrepresented among pot smokers and overrepresented among bad drivers. And AAA actually was good on this issue when it came to the whole per se DUID thing. AAA had a great report they put out earlier this year where they said, no, this whole per se DUID thing is not going to work because there is no number. There's no magic number that tells you somebody's impaired. 5 nanograms could be way too impairing for a 300-pound newbie, whereas 56 nanograms can be unimpairing for a daily medical marijuana patient named Addie Norton, little 110-pound young woman. Everyone reacts differently and processes differently and has tolerances that build up. And this is not just those of us on the marijuana tip talking this. This is the federal government, the FDA, and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says it is inadmissible to attempt to determine someone's impairment based on body fluid testing. And the FDA, which in its warning, the prescription warning for synthetic THC, for Marinol, the prescription warning says, until you know how Marinol may affect you, do not drive or operate heavy machinery. Which, of course, implies, once you do know how to handle your Marinol high, go ahead and drive. Doesn't it? Isn't that what it's telling us? Isn't that the federal government saying, we understand people develop a tolerance to THC? Once you've been taking THC for a certain amount of time and you figured out how it affects you, isn't that okay? Now, that leads me to another story, because this one's getting a lot of play, and it's about this this test in Washington State of a driver who'd been suspected of a hit and run and had a lot of eyewitnesses. Sorry, couldn't come up with the word. Had a lot of eyewitnesses that actually followed them in their cars, tracking the guy because he'd done a hit and run. And when they caught him, he's 53 years old, they caught him, and the blood test for the guy showed him at 270 nanograms of THC per milliliter of blood. Now, Washington State has the unscientific 5 nanogram limit, so the big headline is he was 54 times the legal limit for THC. Well, first of all, if you've got a limit at which somebody 54 times greater than that limit can still operate a car, not well, but still operate a car, your limit's too low. If you were at 54 times the legal limit for alcohol, you'd be dead. There would be death. There wouldn't be any question about you hitting and running anyone. You'd be dead. Now, the Washington State Patrol Toxicology Lab manager, Brianna Peterson, said, quote, that number is not normal. It's not something we typically see, end quote. But more interestingly, came up with the median amount of THC that the lab tested in drivers last year in Washington State, the median amount. So all the suspected people who were considered to be DUI drivers for which the state patrol lab had to test their blood, trying to prove that they were too high to drive, the median was 3.7 nanograms. That's right. The median was below their 5 nanogram limit. The median, meaning half the drivers were below that and half the drivers were above that. So well above, half the drivers were testing below the legal limit. So what good is this legal limit when the cops suspect you of it, and when they go to test you, they're wrong more than half the time? We'll come back and talk a little bit more about this as we wrap up here on the Marijuana Agenda.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me for A Sensible Future from Students for Sensible Drug Policy every other Tuesday here on the Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And continuing this discussion on this Washington State story as I wrap things up, one of the things I wanted to point out about it, it's actually a couple, and it was just some misstatements that you had in the story. And they're pretty typical of what you get when you get these stories about stoned driving and the scare stories that people are trying to put out. And what it has to do with is a couple of statements here. One of them says, quote, drivers who smoked marijuana before getting behind the wheel were involved in 91 out of 499 fatal crashes in the state of in 2015, according to the Washington Traffic Safety Commission. End quote. Now, the average person reading that is going to go, holy shit, that's like one out of five. That's almost 20% of the drivers are stone drivers are getting us killed. Oh, my God. Well, here's the problem. The statement's incorrect because all it tells us is drivers who smoke marijuana at some indeterminate time before getting behind the wheel. The detection of active THC in the blood does not indicate that someone just smoked and got behind the wheel. That can be detected from up to 7 days for some people. Even active THC in the blood, folks, up to 7 days in some people, it can be detected in their blood. And also, when they say we're involved in fatal crashes, that's not caused fatal crashes. That's involved. That means they died in a crash. For instance, if you smoke marijuana on the weekend and then you wake up sober on Monday and then you got T-boned by a drunk driver through no fault of your own, the detection of the active THC in your dead body's blood would be a driver who smoked marijuana before getting behind the wheel who was involved in a fatal crash. And here's another quote from the story that's problematic. Quote, authorities could not estimate how much marijuana the Linwood man would have ingested to test that highly. Remember, the test was 270 nanograms. THC usually cannot be detected through a blood test after 3 to 5 hours, and even chronic users would only build up 1 or 2 nanograms per milliliter, they said. End quote. Bullshit. Active THC can be detectable in blood up to 7 days in a frequent consumer. Cannot be detected after 3 to 5 hours, 7 days for frequent consumers. Now, this 270 nanograms, on the other hand, is pretty astounding. I mean, blood THC levels, when you first inhale, your blood THC levels spike above 100 nanograms, 100, 140, 150, somewhere in there. So I'm willing to concede this guy likely used marijuana very recently before he got behind the wheel and probably in really great amounts, given that number and the totality of the evidence that he had an alleged hit and run and he had witnesses that saw him driving erratically and so forth. But what I despise is when we report on this issue of impaired driving, they just keep reinforcing these unscientific and unjust per se DUID laws, right? Yes, 270. That might be something. If the per se DUID law was 200 nanograms per milliliter, maybe you could make a legitimate argument that, yeah, look, at 200, you ought not be behind the wheel. But far too many people are way sober at 5. Well, that sound means that We're out of time because time flies when you legalize. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, thanks for joining us. Check us out at Delta9House.com. And until next time,
follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Take care of each other,
Tarkies. You plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.